Together over here from Tacoma, Pastor Trinity, and following this brief thing, it'll be only two songs, our holding hymn, and if he gives the same talk, I'll be very happy. I think Elmer Witt would be tempted to say, incidentally, that the Trinity for Al Rognes, too, is Father, Son, and Holden Spirit, because certainly there was a lot of Holden in this message, but not so much for what it remained a servant of the gospel in making us kings. I might just ask you one question before we do anything later. Later on, we're going to give you a chance to ask me questions. That's what we're going to do later on before we close. But I'd like to ask you all one question now. Really, as far as the village is concerned, these banquets get to be a big output on time and energy and even some money from us, of course. We're glad to do it. It provides a festive occasion in midwinter, and everyone's welcome to come along and enjoy a little fun as Christians together. It gives us a little taste of the village midwinter. But we don't want to do it if you don't want it. You know, we don't want to stuff it down your throat. I've called 200 people here in Seattle. I've called all the pastors in Portland. The Portland gang wanted it. The Spokane gang voted last night. They want it again. We do have a speaker for next year. It's the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod's turn. And Dr. William Bugey will come. Bill is a dear friend of the village who understands my feeling that I just do not have these dinners. We can substitute with cottage meetings. And we want the young adults to restore Ascension Day to the church, incidentally. And you'll see all this in this Holden Village capsule. We don't have to talk about it much. But we would like to just ask if any of you feel strongly we shouldn't have any more, that you let us know. Or maybe we could even raise our hands later on. You think about it a little. And if we want another dinner, fine. If we do, it's Dr. Bill Bugey, who was at the village last summer, who recently said that to O.P. Kretzman that anytime O.P. wants to see the village, he'll drive him way out just so he can see it. Bugey told me last summer, he said, you know, there are times I've been wondering about you in your career on this joy that you seem to kind of scatter around as to how deep it went. But he says, all you have to do is be at the village a little and you'll see how the joy is founded. In the wonder of the gospel, the kind of joy that God keeps us in, the hilarity of the kingdom. And that's what we're going to see a little bit of and taste a little of now as we sing, hear Al Rognes, and sing a good deal more later. Al will have to leave a bit earlier than the rest of us. We can enjoy the evening together. Erling, are you up there? Very good. Go away. Just take it off.
Because I was there when the whole village banquet was being held, Carol twisted my arm and let me come and paid $2.50. But that night, he wore red. And so we all bowed low and said, Bobby, you cardinal, Kimberly. And he still did get $100 out of each of us that night. So tonight he's trying the Abbott habit, and I hope it doesn't become a habit. Beware, because if you have $100 hidden away, you can become a pounder so fast when you talk to Carol. That is, if you are more generous than I. He tried to get me to give $100 for the privilege of correcting you tonight. So I'm going to wait and see how you think. And I'll make my decision on the kind of singing you do. So we'll turn to this hymn about the place apart. So it's not a hymn exactly, but sort of, huh? Dad, kids, are you coming up? Here they come.
Thank you.
I think we can do that because you're a great group. We take all the four stanzas, and I'm going to ask that the group over on this side will sing, and I don't know what direction that is. You sing the second stanza alone, and the group on this side will sing the third stanza alone, and we'll all sing the first and fourth stanza together.
Dr. Schutt calls Dr. Alvin Rognes the most loved man in the Lutheran Church today. And I think most of us who know him realize why. He's not afraid to identify with things that may look controversial and weak and even failure. He's been with the village from the beginning. He's never missed a summer. After one of our meetings in Minneapolis, he was present that night, and some of the older people came up with their faces just radiant because of the September deal for the retired. They were going back and get all these senior citizens of Minneapolis organized to come. And Aldous came over kind of shouting and said, you know, I'll come out September and be with you on the faculty if you want me. Well, I had never heard from the man I had invited, Dr. Roland Bainton. And of course, we give no honoraria, so it's a little embarrassing when you ask some people outside the Lutheran fold. So we'll have Al there for sure. I understand Dr. Conrad Bergendorf would like to come too. I'll be there. And that same old gang that a lot of you have known for the layman's theological retreat will all be around. And I have a hunch we'll have several hundred retired people because we're going to literally give the village to them during the month of September. And Dr. Ockness will be our faculty. It's difficult for me ever to introduce him when people are as near and dear to you as Dr. Ockness. You will, I think, see why as he brings his message tonight from the Word of God and from God's Word to us through Holden Village.
I'd like to suggest those of you whose chairs are not the way you'd like to have them be for the next 20 minutes, change them now. The people at our table thought that we really had deserved Erling Thompson's $100. I hope you'll take note of at least the opinion of one table at this meeting. First, I want to thank the Seattle area for giving to us of the bleak Midwest Holden Village. I heard about it before anyone really had taken the initiative to nail it down for the Lutheran community. And some people were daring in this area to get the ball going, rolling, and to get the village organized. And I could mention some of you by name, of course, that first summer that we were there, or in September. Gil Berg was pushing us around, and I understand had done with so many people. I think we of the rest of the United States, who now like to call Holden Village ours too, have you people to thank for it. There are many things you like to do over again, and there are some things you don't like to do over again. But I think life in general is made up of repetition. The same faces day after day. If they don't interest you and you're always looking for new faces, you've gotten sick somewhere along the line. And the person who looks for is constantly thinking of something new. And probably finally, the only thing that interests him is the news that the mail might bring and nothing else. He's lost the real meaning of life. Life is made up of repetitions. And I suspect many of you who wear this kind of a badge tonight have been at the village more than once. I remember the story told of Billy Rose, who had a great water show in the New York World's Fair in 1939. It was said a man came to him one day and said, "I have an act I think you'd like to buy." And Billy Rose said, "What do?" He said, "I get up on a platform 100 feet high, and I dive headfirst into a barrel of sawdust, and I come up smiling." And Mr. Rose said, "I don't believe it, but if you have the act, I want it." So they arranged the demonstration, and the man did climb up on a platform 100 feet high, and he did dive headfirst into a barrel of sawdust, and the barrel broke, the staves scattered. But he got to his feet finally with a wry smile on his face, and Billy Rose said, "I'll give you $1,000 a week." He said, "It isn't enough." Mr. Rose said, $2,000. He said, "I won't take it." And Mr. Rose said, you name your own price. I want the act and I'll pay for it." And the man said, "I don't want the job. This is the first time I've tried it and I don't think I'm going to like it." suppose anybody has been at Holden and hasn't liked it and doesn't want to come back. I've been trying to think what it is that Holden does principally. Now, God created us in His image and intended us to live with Him in a close fellowship all the days of our lives. And then we gave it away. Adam and Eve disobeyed God and lost Him. And in the fullness of time, Jesus Christ came to give us back God, and with God, all the wonders that God had intended for us. Now, this very simple story is kind of difficult for us to believe because we've gotten so accustomed to believing only that which can be measured or counted or seen, so that the laboratory and the microscope, the telescope and other instruments, these determine what is true and what is not true, what is real and what is not real. And a great change has come over the world in the last, I suppose it's taken 600 years. Mr. Sorokin, in the Harvard sociologist, points out in his book, The Crisis of Our Age, that 600 years ago, it was quite customary for, in fact, any artist who went to work would draw pictures of saints or angels, celestial figures. Any sculptor would do the same. The musician wrote the oratorios and the requiems and the masses and the Kyrie eleison, religious subjects. Man took seriously the fact that that which is seen is temporal and will pass away, but that which is unseen is real and abides forever. And man took seriously that he was a child of God and that his tenure upon earth was brief, and that when that was over, he would understand the fullness of his being. He was a child of God above all else. Now, gradually, since that time, particularly with the Renaissance and the rediscovery of man as a child of nature instead of a child of God, we have so concentrated on man as a kind of animal, a very high-grade animal who writes oratorios and who uncovers the secrets of the atom, but an animal nonetheless. And so that Sorokin points out that at this point in our civilization, while 97% of the art 600 years ago was religious art, 97% of the art today is not religious art. Has to do not with the kingdom of God and with celestial things, but has to do with terrestrial things of earth. And Holden, like the church itself, is commissioned to recall man to his high station as a child of God through Jesus Christ, that in some wonderful way Jesus came to this earth in order that we, knowing Him, might know the Father, and through Him and the forgiveness that we have in His redeeming work on the cross, we have a right to the Father's house again. And we are, in many ways, of course, we are like the animals, but, and sometimes I think, why not admit that? After all, we're using them in laboratories, you know, the white rat and the guinea pig and others, and we discover how they behave under certain conditions, and then the conclusion is that because they behave this way or react this way under certain conditions, therefore Mr. Rognus will behave that way under similar situations because they belong to the same general family, And I ought not to be haughty about this and resent it, because after all, they've been martyrs for me in laboratories, and I probably wouldn't even be here tonight had it not been for these noble lower cousins of mine who have given their lives for me. But I resent the fact that this part of my family tree blocks out the other part, the angels and the archangels and all the company of heaven. And I think the great fight on our hands in this 20th century and in the centuries that follow is really the question, what is man? Is he a child of God, or is he just an animal, a high-grade animal to be sure? And if he is but an animal, I venture to say that we will end up with a kind of animal society, finally, a sort of veterinary society, because that's the way you handle animals. If you have 100 cattle and you have pasture for 75, you kill 25. Well, you don't kill them, you sell them, of course. But with man, you can't sell men, so you kill them. And there are civilizations today that are handling man just that way, and hundreds of millions have lost their lives. And if we have a veterinary society where man is no more than an animal, we're going to end up with veterinary values too. I don't read Ann Landers very often, but about a year and a half ago there was a question. A woman wrote saying, I'm living with a man, not my husband. Now I discover that he's two-timing me. He's living with another woman too, not his wife. What shall I do? Shall I stay by him or leave him? And Ann Landers answered this way, as long as you insist on living by those standards, consult your veterinarian. But we are in grave danger throughout the world in this secular age of losing sight of the fact that we are children of God with a great dignity by creation and by redemption. And the church has the great task to call us back to this and to remind us that in Christ Jesus, our brother and savior, we have a right again to the kingdom. Now this, I think, is what in a very singular way this village, cradled as it is among the mountains, calls upon us to claim for ourselves. When we came up the Lake Chelan, the first time, which was in September, I had a dreadful feeling all the way up the lake, in fact. All my crutches were left behind. My telephone, my agendas, my car, everything. What would I lean on, and how could I stand it? And then I began to realize how much or how seldom we stopped. Away from work, away from the hubbub, to take stock of really what we are, and therefore what we are about in this world. And it took about a day before I rested, basked in the wonder of that village. And I think the very presence of God's nature there in such lavish beauty and splendor gives a person the quiet to ponder not the mountain peaks, but what is behind the mountain, the great and good God who made it all and who redeems us. I'd like to say three things that I think are done there. And it's the three things that we lost at the time of the fall of man. I've tried to explain this to myself and to others, and I think it's fairly right that when The Bible describes Adam and Eve before the fall as innocent, unaware that they were naked, and after the fall describes them as becoming self-conscious and putting clothing on. You can read into that, I suppose, a number of meanings, but I like to think of it this way, that before the fall, man was lost in three great centers. The first was the greatness and goodness of God. The second, the beauty of the garden. And the third, in each other. Adam lost in admiration and affection for Eve, and Eve for Adam. And that when the fall came, and because they were so lost in these centers outside of themselves, they were without self-consciousness and no embarrassment. They didn't turn in upon themselves. They were like a two-year-old boy, you know, who runs around to his mother's sudden consternation without any clothes on when people are coming by. The boy couldn't care less. The mother cared a good deal often. But to the degree that we forget ourselves and are lost again in these three centers, the greatness and the goodness of God, the beauty of the garden, the beauty of the world around us, and lost in each other, to that degree has the Lord been able to usher us back into the wonders of the Father's house. Somebody has said that 85% of religion is wonder and awe. And when you ponder God, isn't this what it is? And deep down we need God. We are made for Him. We can avoid Him. At least avoid the right kind of encounters with Him. But we were made for Him. I remember the little story told about the girl, about three, who had lost her mother and couldn't be consoled. The days that followed, she would be weeping and crying for her mother. Her brothers brought her toys. Her father told her stories. They brought her gifts. And they succeeded in distracting her mind from that one subject. But intermittently, she'd push all these things aside and say, I don't want nothing. I want my mama. I don't want nothing. I want my mama. Deep in the heart of man, there's the same need. Give everything to him. Wealth and station and rank, friends, everything. And still there will be longings and yearnings that are not satisfied, and he will cry really, though he may not use the words, I don't want nothing, I want God. And nothing but God really will satisfy. And in some strange and wonderful way, I think Holden Village gives us the setting in which this can be rediscovered. And not just because of the glaciers and the beautiful fir trees, but because of the program that in a remarkable way registers this kind of longing and yearning. And the second, that we ought to enjoy the beauties of the garden, the beauties of life around us. I had an English teacher named Borghild Dahl, who lost her vision, and she wrote a story telling how she recovered it. And I'll never forget the last part of the book where she rhapsodizes over finding the color in a soap bubble in the sink as she's washing the dishes. This was just marvelous. And we who have our eyesight and can entertain these lavish colors that are around us all the time. We go blithely on our way, oftentimes forgetting even to think of them or to notice them. I had a friend who said something very bad is happening to me, that I'm beginning to enjoy my, I think it was a Chrysler, I mean, beginning to enjoy my new car more than the rose bush outside of my house. And something very bad is happening to me. And he was right that without payment, we who have ears to hear with and eyes to see with are just inundated by the wonder of things to see and things to hear in this marvelous garden, this universe into which we've been placed. And I don't suppose that there are so many things wrong with life, you say. And to be sure, there are many things. There's the war, the Vietnam War, there's exploding populations and juvenile delinquency and divorce and all of this, but this is our Father's world, and He hasn't abandoned it, and there's a great deal of wonderful things in it to see and to enjoy. And think of, if you didn't have ears to hear with and you couldn't hear the rippling laughter of a child, and you didn't have eyes to see with and you couldn't see the colors in the sunset this evening, how tragic it would be. And yet we speed along in our motor cars and are oblivious to it day after day. We need to, you know, just bask in the wonders of God's world again. Be lost in the greatness and the goodness of God, and be lost in the beauties of the world. And thirdly, be lost in each other. When the church fathers tried to answer the question, what is the meaning or the aim of life? The answer was to glorify God and to serve Him and to enjoy Him forever. This note of enjoyment we've let slip too. We've gotten so busy, and then we turn in upon ourselves, you know. This is the age of the psychologist and the sociologist. And while these sciences have been very helpful, they also have been, we must be vigilant not to use them to turn in upon ourselves and fail to see God and fail to see the world around us and fail to see our fellow men. I deplore oftentimes this penchant we have for analysis. And at the end of almost any analysis, or any analysis, you have a gloomy picture. Now I can be lost in my enjoyment of you, and I can be lost in my trying to meet your needs, and life can glow again. In fact, I'm equipped by God to carry an awful lot of your needs and your anxieties and fears. I'm really not put together to carry many of mine alone. God made us that way. We have almost unlimited resources to be concerned about another person and to enjoy another person. We have very limited resources to enjoy ourselves by ourselves and to carry our anxieties by ourselves. And Jesus said, bear one another's burdens, weep with those who weep, rejoice with those who rejoice, pointing us out to our brother. In the fall, we had these three things lost. They lost God because they fled Him and tried to hide from Him. They lost the garden. They were driven out of the garden. And they lost each other in that very grim final conclusion when Cain said, am I my brother's keeper? And Jesus wants us to find them all again. The wonder of God's goodness and beauty and goodness and greatness, the beauty of the garden and each other. Now, If, for instance, one evening, well, tonight we're gathered, you're gathered, of course, to hear a speech, which is soon over, but we're kind of gathered for fun, aren't we? We're not going to write any resolutions at the end of this meeting, and you're going to go away saying, well, all this stuff that Rodney's talked about, I've heard from my pastor many times. So there's nothing really engrossing that we've taken on. But supposing one night a few friends happen to drift together. You call on one of your friends, you say, well, let's go over and see what they're doing tonight. And it happened that two or three other couples also dropped in that night. Let's say all of them Christian people who really kind of liked each other. And you spent the evening, the hours whiled away, you kind of had bared your souls to each other in the process, not aiming to, but so 12 o'clock comes along and you go home, you've had a delightful evening together, you've discussed no subjects of any importance, you wrote no resolutions, and you have no reports to make to anybody, and probably each one of you will go away kind of guilty that you hadn't been doing something important that evening. When probably what you had been doing, enjoying one another, you were exploiting one of the great gifts that God has given us, if we only will use it, to enjoy one another. And then, of course, Adam and Eve before the fall, I suspect, had no needs, no anxieties of ease that Adam had to carry. But after the fall, we have burdens to carry for one another. And we cannot be in the kingdom, back in the Father's house. We can't be at Holden Village and catch the spirit of that place without being sensitized to the brother's need. Sir William Wilberforce, a young man in the British Parliament, had a decisive encounter with God and was about at the point of giving up his political career and going into some, quote, more religious work, when his friend, the younger Pitt, persuaded him to stay on in Parliament and give his life to eradicate from the empire the cancer that ate at its life, the slave traffic, which was legal. 20 or 30 years later, Parliament met one evening to vote out, at long last, the traffic in slaves. And the speaker that night closed his address with these words, "I am thinking tonight of two heads and two pillows. One is the head of Napoleon, tossing feverishly on a pillow on the island of Helena, after having left a trail of blood from Jena to Waterloo. One is the man who tonight will see the consummation of his life's work. If I were to choose, I would not choose the pillow of Napoleon, but I would choose the head that will rest tonight when our vote is taken upon the pillow of Wilberforce." How many great good, how much great good has come back into the human family because some person has rediscovered God to enjoy him and to heed his will. Who rediscovers the earth and sees its ills but also sees its great possibilities and enjoys what is about. And then in God has rediscovered his neighbor and sets out on the cause of justice and mercy to bear the burden of his neighbor. I think this whole process, which is, after all, what we are about in our homes, in our churches and in our Christian life everywhere. This has, I think, a rather strange and strong focus in Holden Village. And I hope many of you who haven't been there can come and become personally acquainted with it and be strengthened by it and enjoy it. And that you'll part with some of your dollars to see that an enterprise which I think God so providentially placed in our hands be allowed to grow strong and serve us as I'm sure the Lord wants it to be for us. I hope to meet many of you there sometime in the next year.
Every great man stands a silly woman, and Nora takes the prize. It's great. And those of you who've been up there, you know how great it is. Thank you. And he also puts his money where his mouth is, may I say. It's been one of the great things. So I write Dr. Schutz each time he sends us $25. We get one every other month. I know how many places are after him. I just say, you don't feel like you're in exile up in the mountains, as so many of the pastors seem to indicate to me. Drawing the abbot of Holden Village, no abbot in exile, but we're right in the center of the church. Very dear letter, handwritten, 2 pages from Dr. Fry. And like I said, you'd be surprised, so oftentimes we're talking about you and what's happening there, and the refreshment it's meaning to many of us. Much more that I can't quote, because it was just too wholesome, but in his own handwriting. And that's something, isn't it, when a man takes time. We are grateful. Thank you, Al, for coming. We're going to sing, God, keep us steadfast in thy word. Lord, keep us steadfast in thy word. One of the great hymns of the church, and we're singing tonight. We do have some Roman Catholic friends with us from the chancery. I'm sitting at a table with some of my Assembly of God friends, amongst them, their pastorates here. I've been in prison camp with some of them. They're very dear to me. It's wonderful how God joins us in his word, and we can sing these songs together, these songs of prayer that God will keep us steadfast in his word. Let's sing it tonight with the prayer that God brings us closer. As we come closer to his word, we come closer together. Number 5, and Erling will direct us in our prayer hymn. One thing tonight, if we were to stand, the representatives of the 3 Lutheran church bodies that own Holden Village, we'd find would be equal numbered here. It's one of the tremendous things that's happened with us. And you might know that the latest founder to join us, in fact, is Elmer Witt, the youth director of the Lutheran Church. He sent his $50 on his $100 this week with a delightful letter. You'd love it. He simply says they made a mistake this year in figuring out their Lord's fund by letting their children in on the discussion. So the whole family decided where their money was to go in the kingdom. And you know what got vote number 1 from the kids, so Holden Village is now a part of the Witt family stewardship as a founder. And we need many more. The youth departments are withdrawing, as you know. The LCA budget picked up their Luther League support this year. But do read it, and it's exact, and our thanks for what they have done and permitted us to do while they've been with us. The Lutheran Church, Missouri Synod, Walter League intends to stay with us. And we will have them for good in their support. We are hoping that the American Lutheran Church will stop at the 5,000 mark and at least give us that much. The LCA will withdraw next year, not this year's ALC, but next year at $2,500 a year. And we are grateful for some rather large sums that have permitted us to live. We will not continue to live unless individuals pick it up as founders, and as those who have more blessings from our Lord and can be grubstakers or more. Some of them at headquarters are. Al Deering has started his second $1,000 3 years ago, and he's pretty well through the second. And he'll be with us, incidentally, in June again. So many of you love to be there when he is there. The faculty, I have just a brief comment. I can't begin to mention them all. There are 32. We spend the money that we get from our youth departments on this. None of them receive honoraria. We do pay their transportation. And yet, in many cases, the transportation, again, is handed back. People like the Edmonds, I don't think have ever kept theirs, the Hong, some of the others, who've always handed theirs back. We have some tremendous men on the faculty this summer. Whenever I get a little depressed about some things in the village life, and you will, I agreed to take this job for 2 years as three men when I first took it. I'm still three men now, going on my fourth year, and my wife's health has failed under it. Not mine, but she picks up the home base, and it's now 4 weeks that I'm gone, and it gets to be a little lonely life and a little tough one for her. I'm not enjoying everything about it, but I do it for you, and I am glad for what happened. And I just think of what's going to happen next summer. Paul Sonnet, one of the great patristic teachers, a thrilling teacher. So great a teacher, it's hard for other teachers to have him around. Even when they're devout Christians, it's hard to take a good teacher around when you're paid to be a teacher yourself, and here a teacher actually appears. There are only two or three a century. Paul Sonic is one of them. You can enjoy him. Be part of it. It's a tremendous spirit. We'll learn about Irenaeus and Augustine, and you're going to be excited about them. In this Reformation year, we'll see people knew the gospel all through the church. Luther didn't suddenly discover it. 16th century. Never claimed anything like that. It's what's created the church in every century. Beanie will be with us all summer. Some of our scientists in the early part of the year include the man who wrote the Fascination of Stones in the January National Geographic last year, 1966, Collins. His wife will be botanist. Leo Busted, one of your own boys, and you feel like that, I hope, about him. A two-gun man. He has two PhDs. He has the Radiobiological Laboratory and the School of Veterinary Medicine. He'll be with us again. He's always with us. I had to force him on the faculty last year, literally. He always comes to the village several times a year. He said, I'm not ready yet. And I said, Leo, for once, the church's going to discover its son before the world does. I said, come on out of the oven. And you know what a tremendous series of lectures he gave. Terrific. And we were just lucky, weren't we? We got him right on the line because Lowell Thomas picked him up, CBS, and you all heard about him last summer, the inventor of the 57-pound pig, and the man who was also noted in the international circles and radioisotopes. Tremendous spirit. Just as modest as his intelligence is great. And he thinks of the theologians of his life as being guys like Rognus and myself. It's kind of crazy to be related that way to a mind like this. Some of the other men through the summer, too many to mention that you will be thrilled with because you can talk to them. You can interrupt them. We have no one on the faculty that you cannot interrupt at any time. That's the village. Conversation. Not a passive audience like you are right now, but interrupt. We'll let you interrupt later with questions. Now we're going to have a chance. You can look at these things. Everything I would have said is here. You're going to have a chance to just enjoy our own Helen Landsberg. She's going down to Hollywood with us. She's recording there now. And you'll have a chance to hear some of her songs. And then we'll, during the showing of the films by Daryl, our own Daryl Lundy, whom you all know and love, I hope, who's giving another 6 months to the village now, you can see the village as it stands now. Over here we have Winter at Holden. Ah, well, it depends upon the way you say the ah, maybe. But it's wonderful. Werner and Judy could not leave. Judy's busy taking a suntan and couldn't be disturbed. It's that warm, and she's doing that. 60 inches of snow, Werner tells me, and he says it'll be 60 inches of snow until the end of April, start of May. It doesn't just get any deeper, sort of just settles now. But beautiful, lovely sunny skies and up to 60 degrees in the afternoon. What skiing. But I don't see any future possibility of a winter program myself, and were the board meeting now, I would have to vote no. We need more capital investment, and we need another man on the staff before that can be attempted. And I don't anticipate next year, but it's open now, and you can enjoy it. Same prices as summer, during Easter, anytime. But greetings from them, and also now, from our own Helen, we'll have a feeling of being at the village for some moments as we hear her sing and as we sing with her. Helen?
All right. She wants me to say some more while she's getting ready, which I'm glad to do.
I'm always glad to do that. Now, senior citizens, your Washington Council on Aging will be giving you the information also that the village is putting its subsidy into you. I'm not making these prices public, for I can't explain them. How come we can charge this for senior citizens and then the rest of you pay more? Frankly, we're giving it away. We get nothing on this, as Mayor Berg could tell you. There is no money made whatsoever, but the price is made at a price that you can pay on your pension. $110 for the whole month of September, $35 per week. They're going to come from Minneapolis by the busload. I hope they do from Seattle and Spokane and Portland. It'll be a wonderful month together. Then I relate to you why. Because the young adult and the senior citizen are peculiarly responsible for the renewal of the inner city. They stay. The rest of us move out. And we're grateful for it. You see these youth who sit up here and stand up here as we sing, they're the workers at the village, and there are a lot of them. Those are from this area. We can always use more. I suppose they get more from it than anyone. When you come up, do a little work. It's fun. You own it all the more. And the senior citizens will too, we know. They love to come out in the kitchen and help and be involved. Our workers, we report only one on what the village means, because she said this herself to the entire village last summer. We could have a number of you are here tonight who would have said the same thing. Someone who came officially belonging to a group that believes that God is dead, who is now training to be a missionary to America for the Christian church, into which she was confirmed on Advent Sunday, and I must say, but for Holden Village, we would have a deepening, and not a daughter of the Most High in Diane.
I summon this evening the two songs that I'm singing are about busy church women. And we are a part of a herd sometimes, as Dr. Rodman said. First song is about being a part of a herd of sheep. And the lady who wrote the words for this is Mrs. Expand, a member of Queen Anne's Church, and I'd like to have her stand. She gave the inspiration for the melody for this song.
Run, sheep, run, run, sheep.
Florence also wrote the words to the next song. This is about a very busy church woman who didn't have time to answer the door.
Jesus?